Happy Wednesday, everybody. I'm Jordan Schusterman.
I am Russell Dorsey.
And Russ is joining me on this Wednesday edition of Baseball Barbacast, where we are going to talk about Mookie Betts, who, Russ, I understand is pretty good at baseball.
Kind of good. And other things.
All that and more. Mookie, though, we're going to talk about Mookie for a while on this Wednesday edition of Baseball Barbacast.
The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that knows how to get Mookie Betts out. I'm Jordan Schusterman, joined by a special co-host today, Russ Dorsey. And Russ, it can't be that hard. I mean, just don't throw him something down the middle, right?
Here's the thing. If I see the guy with the 1900 OPS, the last thing that I'm going to do is throw him fastballs middle.
Yeah. Or maybe mix in some like, breaking something spinning a little
eye
bit,
level,
maybe away
maybe,
from him.
How about something outside the zone? Yeah.
Anything but inside that imaginary box to Mookie Betts. We are, of course, going to talk about Mookie Betts on this Wednesday edition of Baseball Barbacast. Of course, as you can tell if you're watching or listening, Jake Mintz is not joining us. If you do follow us on Instagram, you may have seen Jake post about this earlier this week, but his grandmother passed away earlier this week, so our thoughts are with him and his family. He is, of course, unavailable for today's show, but he said the show must go on. Go find a co-host. And Russ Dorsey is someone who we've been wanting to have on the show. Now, first of all, we've had on past iterations of the podcast, obviously, and now it is even more natural because you are a Yahoo Sports colleague. And let's start there before we get into today's show. Like, it's kind of nice working together, right, Russ?
It's been
kind of fun.
It's sick. It's something the three of us had talked about for a long time. Like, wouldn't it be cool if we were all on the same team? And the fine folks at Yahoo were just like, wouldn't it be cool if you guys were all on the same team? So I think it's awesome to work with you and Jake. And we've already been able to do some cool stuff. And I'm thrilled that we get to do more cool stuff like that for years to come.
Yeah. So again, this was a natural, like in the alternate timeline where I needed a co-host and we weren't working together, you would have already been one of the first people I would have asked to do this. So in this case, it works out quite nicely. As we tease at the top, we are going to talk about Mookie Betts. We already had a no-hitter, Ronel Blanco, giving us what I believe was the earliest no-hitter in baseball history.
Wow.
As far as dates go. So that's pretty exciting. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about Bryce Harper, who raised his OPS 1,000 points in one night.
Who doesn't love small sample sizes?
Yeah, the small sample size is especially goofy. It's still less than 1 week into the season, of course. We'll talk about the Astros bullpen not exactly looking like what it was supposed to. And then we'll hit some more news and notes in the second half of the show. But Russ, let us begin out in Los Angeles with Mookie Betts. Listen, should we start with the no-hitter? Probably. But I want to start with Mookie, okay? Because while it is not news that Mookie Betts is a very talented, productive, amazing, astonishing baseball player, even for him, the heater that we are witnessing amidst the Dodgers circus that is, of course, taking place for a million reasons that have nothing to do with him, it is something to behold. I know you were in Los Angeles for opening weekend, and so I'll just kick it to you here. He hits another home run last night. He's already up to five. What does anything seem different, or are we just watching one of the best kind of at his best?
I would love to say that there was something that Mookie Betts was doing differently to get him on this role. I saw Mookie out in LA, talked to him. He is as normal as can be, and I mean that in the most complimentary way. Like, he comes up, says, "What's going on, man?" He's out there taking ground balls every day since he is their starting shortstop now. And you would think that would add some layer of difficulty, or maybe he's thinking about that instead of what he's doing. He's not. He's still just one of the best players in baseball. And guy finished second in MVP voting last year. He clearly doesn't want to come in second again this year. Mookie Betts is that kid that you grow up with that's good at everything. I'm talking hitting, I'm talking defense, I'm talking media. I literally told him, I said, "You have to relax, bro. Like, you have to save some jobs for the rest of us." And I said, "If you start writing, we're out of here." And he thought that was very funny.
Let me just say, the dude is coming. He started podcasting. I don't know if he's continuing his show this year, but I'm already concerned about that. If he's going to be doing the best interviews also. Like, we've joked about this already over the last few years. It felt like after he won immediately in 2020, 2021, it's not that he wasn't good, but he seemed bored, right? It was like, all right, like, let's just get through the season. He was still an all-star, but he didn't get any MVP votes that year. He was just kind of normal, amazing. And then at some point, you know, in 2022, he kicked in. He's like, wait a minute. I am going to be here for the next 500 years. Like, this is my home. I'm still amazing. What can I do to make this more interesting for me? Now, obviously, last year we started to see that mixing in the defensive side of things. But let's focus on the hitting here. Because what has changed, it from my perspective, and what as we've saw certainly last year with a career high in home runs, is he has essentially perfected modern major league hitting, right? This is not the biggest guy on the team. He's obviously never going to post the highest exit velocity, certainly now that Shohei's on the team. And it doesn't matter because what Mookie, as you said, Mookie's good at everything. What is the key to being a successful hitter in a lot of ways in 2024? It is pulling fly balls. And he said, okay, I got you. I'm going to figure out how to do that better than absolutely everybody. And I have just enough juice and just enough, you know, general just hitting ability that, I mean, Russ, is he going to hit 50 home runs? Is that crazy? Like he might do that.
He showed last year, well, if I can hit 39. And I think there was definitely a concerted effort because you saw at points last year where he didn't look like himself. And then it was like maybe right around May, it's like, oh, there he is, where he starts hitting the ball in the air and then starts hitting the ball in the air with authority. And then those balls start flying to the ballpark. And so, yes, I do think he's perfected that and getting comfortable with hitting the ball in the air, but still being able to do what he does, like the ball he hit in the gap for the triple a couple of nights ago. It's like, all right, there's Mookie Betts. And then I don't think it hurts to have Shohei Ohtani and Freddie Freeman hitting behind you. That offense is stupid, and it's not because of the three guys at the top. It's because you have Teoscar Hernandez and Max Muncy, who are hitting fifth and sixth. In the case of Muncy, the night he hit the game-winning homer against the Cardinals, he wasn't even starting that day. They'd be hitting third or fourth on a lot of rosters around the big leagues. And the Dodgers can just roll it out there and say, yeah, Teoscar hit six and then just hit like 35 homers. It's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Let alone the guy they just gave the biggest contract a catcher has ever received, right?
The best catcher in baseball is Will Smith. And people are like, okay, Will Smith.
Nobody cares.
No.
Nobody cares. Right. If you just like looked at the lineup past the top three. Now, let's be clear. The reason we were talking about it as a historic group is because of that top three. But it is interesting in the early going as Shohei kind of finds his footing. Like, there's no easy answers here. But like right now, I'd rather pitch Shohei Ohtani.
1,000%. He's not even swinging the bat well, and they're averaging seven runs a game.
I know. That's easy for me to say, right? But right now, hell yeah, I'm pitching around Mookie, right? But just sticking on Mookie again for a second. Like, again, that concept of him kind of perfecting what it means to be a modern power hitter, right, for a guy that is still Mookie Betts-sized, right? It's not like I know he went to Driveline and maybe he trains his bat speed. He has unlocked more raw power to some degree. But let's remember what he looked like in the Home Run Derby, right? Like, this guy has essentially broken our understanding of, like, grading power, right? And we've had a couple examples of this in recent years with guys like Altuve and guys like Jose Ramirez, Alex Bregman, where normally when you're scouting a hitter, right, you have like the raw power grade, which is like, how hard can you hit the ball? How far can you hit the ball in a BP setting in perfect conditions, right? And then normally you adjust that down, right? For most hitters, it's like, okay, you know, Ellie De La Cruz or O'Neill Cruz or Joey Gallo or whatever. It's like they have whatever 80 grade raw power on the 20 to 80 scale, but that's not going to actualize to the same number of home runs because they can't actually tap into it. Mookie, despite very rarely hitting a ball, you know, 110, has 80 grade game power. He like basically breaks the scale where you have like a 55 raw power, but like 80 game power. I can't really remember ever seeing anything like that. Again, I think Altuve and Jose Ramirez are the closest thing we have. But what Mookie's doing now is just, it's just silly. I mean, it's like, and I say, oh, just throw him, but don't throw him fastballs. He's hitting changeups. He's hitting sliders. It doesn't matter where in the zone it is. It's special, man. And I think we knew that, again, still early, still tiny sample size. I think the Shohei addition was so interesting for me is how it was going to affect Mookie, how it was going to affect Freddie. And in the early going, I think we are seeing Mookie is really capitalizing to a pretty ridiculous degree.
I think the point you make about being able to translate power in game is so important because you're right. There are so many dudes that have way more raw power than Mookie Betts. But the ability to barrel baseballs consistently is so important in translating that to home runs in games, hitting the ball in the gap, hitting the ball hard. And yeah. I think the fact that he can do that maybe better than anybody in baseball.
Yeah,
in terms of,
absolutely,
I will always find the barrel.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And I saw him hit a home run on Friday, just hanging breaking ball. Like, it doesn't matter. And yeah. He's not the guy that you can make the mistake to. He's not the guy that you can throw the cement mixer, get me over breaking ball, because I'll jump the yard on you and ambush you first pitch. Or if you want to, yeah, let's throw the sweeper out over the heart of the plate. All right, now it's going 410.
Yeah. Yeah, and to that point, right, and that's why, again, when you look at it, and you're like, oh, well, no, but he is like 95th percentile in average exit velocity, and that's because he's so rarely mishitting the ball, right?
Yes.
Like, while he cannot necessarily max what Ohtani or Freddie Freeman or even a guy like Teoscar Hernandez, whatever, Max Muncy, right, it doesn't matter because he's so rarely hitting balls not hard that he's going to end up at the top end of the average exit velocity. And to your point there about the mistakes – that is so much of major league hitting. And it sounds dismissive, but that's the name of the game. If you are never missing mistakes, your numbers in the major leagues are going to be ridiculous because even the best pitchers in the world are going to miss. And so much of like half of your stats are going to be punishing mistakes. Like, I truly believe that. And that's not a bad thing. That's just the nature of being a hitter against the best pitchers in the world is you have to hit it when they mess up, which is very rarely. And Mookie Betts is also one of the best at that.
You hear people all the time be like, you make your career off of fours and fives, right? And the great players, the really good players hit ones and twos as well. And so He's making me look really smart because I picked him to win MVP. So thank you, Mookie.
Yes, yes. So anyway, Mookie, it's ridiculous. I am fascinated to see how he gets pitched differently because I think the thing about Shohei too with him behind him is like, even if you see Shohei struggling, and again, we talked about it on Monday, like he's still hitting the ball really hard, that just mental aspect of him on is still terrifying, right? Like he's still so imposing and so... I mean, literally, just actually intimidating, even though one of my favorite things about Shohei in the box is how, like, peaceful and just how, like, the opposite of intimidating he looks in terms of his facial expressions. Like, yeah. It's not a scowl. It's not like, oh, watch out. Like, he's just like, all right, I'm here. I'm relaxed. I'm where I need to be.
I think Mookie, and I think he currently, at time of recording, leads baseball in walks. When Shohei starts hitting, he's... definitely going to lead baseball in walks because you're not going to want to pitch to Mookie, and it's going to make that much harder to focus on, I got to throw this guy strikes. I really don't want to. So maybe I'll pitch to Shohei and set up a double play ball, but then that No, I've already seen it where the Dodgers start the game, first inning, Mookie gets a hit, Shohei gets a hit, Freddie gets a hit, and now it's 1-0 Dodgers before you even gotten to your seat.
Yeah. And then you're like, all right, well, now I can take a breather and face Will Smith and Max Muncy and Teoscar.
And now it's 5-0.
It's like, all right, have fun with that. All right, good luck, everybody. So anyway, listen, I know it's going to be tiring to hear about this, but man, and by the way, we'll hit on the Dodgers pitching a little bit later with Walker Buehler, you know, coming back and making a rehab start. But yeah, there is a reason this team is getting the hype it does, and we aren't even really seeing them at full strength yet. So okay, so that's the Dodgers. Listen, they'll get plenty of attention. Mookie is sensational. And as someone who was just around that team, I definitely wanted to get your insight there. And you know, who knows, he'll probably have however many more home runs by the time we talk later this week. But let's move to the other biggest news of the week so far in the baseball season, certainly on the field, and that was the no-hitter thrown by Ronel Blanco, right-handed pitcher of the Houston Astros. I'm going to start with something very simple, Russ. What did you know about Ronel Blanco before Monday? This is a safe space. We can be honest. If you didn't know anything, that's totally okay. I'll explain what dorky roads led me to knowing a lot about Ronel Blanco before Monday. But I'm excited to hear, like, what was your reaction? I don't know if you were traveling on Monday or whatever, like how you watched this or whatever. But as you heard, like, sixth inning, like, sorry, who has a no hitter in the sixth
inning?
Yeah,
I was on a flight. I was on a flight back from Los Angeles, and I'm not gonna lie to you, Jordan. I know everybody is listening to this and saying, oh, national MLB insider Russ Dorsey knows everything about baseball. He doesn't. And he didn't know who Ronel Blanco was. And you know what, Jordan? That is okay. It's one of the best parts about baseball, because
makes it even better.
On a specific day, this guy can be the best in the game.
Yeah. Yeah. He can have all the headlines. He can have the MLB.com story that's, here are 10 things you need to know about Ronel Blanco, right? Like,
because yes, they already again, know. You don't know right, these, right. You don't know one thing, so here's 10. Right.
But like, that's the beauty of it. It really is. You when he woke up that day, what did he know he was going to be in his eighth major league start, going to be making history? No, of course not. But because the Astros have had their fair share of pitching injuries to the rotation in particular. Of course, Verlander and Urquidy already, you know, lost Garcia and McCullers, who are still kind of coming back from injury. There were innings available in this Astros rotation. And though Ronel Blanco, for the bulk of his professional career, had been being developed as a reliever, and the reason I was familiar with him is because he has basically been untouchable in the Dominican Winter League over the last 3 years, pitching for Estrellas out of relief, like as the closer, pretty much. But a couple of years ago, the Astros were like, no, like, we still think this guy has the arsenal to pitch as a starter. And whether it was because it's not like they knew they were going to have this ridiculous barrage of injuries to their rotation, but it proved to be good to keep him stretched out and keep him developing as a starter, because now you go into the season with behind Valdez, you know, Javier and Hunter Brown. They were like, damn, we need someone to be a starter. And here comes Ronel Blanco delivering a no-hitter against the Blue Jays to give the Astros their first win of the season, to give Joe Espada the first win of his managerial career, to give, you know, Yiner Diaz, I think one of the big stories of course, this season for the Astros is what is this pitching staff without Martin Maldonado? We'll get to the bullpen in a little bit. But as far as the starting rotation, Fromber looks fantastic. Right. Javier, I would say, looks pretty freaking awesome.
Yeah.
And then now you have this moment for Blanco. But just a really cool story. I mean, he's one of the many guys that they've signed out of the Dominican Republic or Venezuela for a little bit later. I think a big trend in baseball that is something that I think, you know, I would love to dig into more is teams are not investing internationally in pitchers at the normal age that they normal are, right? So we have, you know, when players sign as amateurs out of the Dominican or Venezuela or other parts of Latin America at age 16, that is not a time you necessarily want to go all in on a pitcher and what they look like at 16, let alone 15 or whenever some of these deals are coming together, right? That's just a risky age. And so instead you see teams kind of take advantage and say, hey, let's wait to see what they look like when they're 18, 19. They're not going to command as much of a signing bonus. And then if we have good player development and we kind of trust in our ability, our organization to kind of bring these pitchers along, there's incredible talent that is still able to be kind of uncovered. And the Astros have done that over and over and over. Now three of them have thrown or been a huge parts of no-hitters in Fromber, in Javier, and now Rinel Blanco. So it was really impressive. He was throwing like 40% changeups, which is always fun when you see that from a starting pitcher over the course of a game. But yeah, you know, watch some of the highlights. Were there any other takeaways from this game for you?
I think for me, it was, there's a lot of bad around baseball. And I know we're going to talk about that also in the pod. This wasn't like a really bad lineup. Like, you're talking about the Toronto Blue Jays that have Vlad Jr., that have George Springer, that has Bo Bichette. And he was able to carve them up. Right? Like, it's not a perfecto, right? Which is the top tier performance you can have, unless it's like a 20 strikeout game where you give up one hit, whatever. But this was a really solid performance against a really good team for a guy that does not have a lot of experience starting in the big leagues. And I think that was impressive in and of itself, where 8 major league starts, I'm not letting that guy go to 105 pitches. He's lucky to get 85 pitches. Right. And they said, Joe Spada said he was probably going to be done after Vlad Jr., regardless of what happened. So I thought that was really cool.
Oh, yeah. And now you mentioned that. Now I agree. You know, it wasn't a perfect game. And because we've had so many no-hitters in recent years, like Jake and I have been pretty consistent. Like, perfect game is still such a different level. And
yeah.
But again, because of how rare complete games are for starting pitchers now, I can still appreciate any pitcher going 9, let alone it's no hits or not. And you mentioned, right, okay, it's not necessarily 20, only 7 strikeouts. I mean, the only base runners were George Springer to like lead off the game, and then George Springer in the 9th. So, I mean, it was roughly perfect for most of this game. And yeah, it was just, of course, an incredible achievement and something that, of course, was quickly undone from a Astros vibes perspective because of what happened on Tuesday with the Josh Hader implosion. And we can, I guess, get to that in a second. But it is a reminder, though, just a last thing on Blanco, like, that is why the Astros are going to stay relevant, because while their farm system, and we've seen this with teams like the Braves too, their farm system is not going to rank. It's bad. I mean, it's bad, right? It's not a good situation. That doesn't always matter, because they still have guys, and there's more coming. By the way, if you look at their system, you look at some of the pitchers they have at the upper levels, there are more guys coming that you don't necessarily know about yet that you aren't going to see on top prospect lists because they didn't sign for a lot of money or they were drafted in a later round. They are going to pitch quality major league innings. And it is a reminder that once they get, listen, Astros are clearly not a perfect team anymore. But once they get, let alone once they get healthy and, you know, get some of these guys back like McCullers and Garcia and everything, that is why they are still a team and an organization to kind of be feared, I would say, in the American League, because they've kind of earned that benefit of the doubt. And I think Blanco's showing was really, really proof of that. But let's stick in Houston here for a second, because not only does, of course, what happens over the weekend where they get mopped by the Yankees at home, this bullpen that we were all hyping up, because what else can we do on paper? You look at Ryan Pressly, Brian Abreu, and Josh Hader, you say, how could it can't get better than this? I mean, even if they hadn't signed Josh Hader, we would say it can't get better than this, right? Well, so far, I believe they have the 28th ranked bullpen ERA in baseball. And Josh Hader going for his first save on Tuesday night, giving up a rocket to David Schneider. Listen, does that mean Josh Hader's never going to save a game for the Houston Astros? Of course not. But it is a reminder of how fickle bullpens can be in all small samples and the risks of expecting anything from any bullpen at any time.
Absolutely. And I think the change, like, I think guys always say, hey, whatever helps the team win. So Ryan Pressly saying that, I think one is important because it's a guy that's committed to winning. Hey, if this dude's one of the best closers in the game, and I am also one of the best closers in the game, I can still affect this game in a big way in the eighth inning, and it makes us that much better. So salute to him for that. But it is an adjustment for him, for Abreu, to be like, all right, our roles are going to have to change. Like, coming in the seventh is different than coming in the eighth. And I think the idea of high leverage is kind of like jumbled together, where it's like, you know, the save could come in the seventh inning, right? Like, we love doing that. But I still think baseball players are creatures of habit. So when you change those habits, whether it's coming in one inning earlier, two innings earlier for Abreu, it's like, all right, I need to settle into this role. Josh Hader, you talk about a guy who's a creature of habit. he's not a guy that's going to go out there, oh, I'll get us a 4-5 out safe. No, give me my 3 outs and let's go home. And so being in a new location again, after, you know, being in Milwaukee and being in San Diego, now coming to Houston where these expectations of, hey, you got to be the guy now and you want to get paid, you get paid, and then it doesn't go well. Do I think Josh Hader is still a top 3 closer in Major League Baseball? I absolutely do. But to your point, bullpens are fickle, and sometimes they don't do what you expect them to do because it's not a exact science. And so I think the Astros are learning that. Also, Astros haven't been playing good baseball, so this just goes into that. But do I think there's a time where the 3 of those guys are electric and lights out at this point this season? Absolutely.
Yeah. But right. I mean, again, it's like Josh Hader. Oh, well, he was so untouchable last year. He leveled up. It's like he had a 5.22 the year before that. I know he was still an all-star, but it's like, this is just kind of what you're going to have to deal with, not only with Hader, because occasionally he likes to give up home runs, but also just that when you have the control of that. But it's also, whatever, the small samples we're talking about in the first week of the season, that's just the nature of talking about relievers, is these tiny samples. And it's not just the tiny samples, it's the tiny samples that are the biggest moments of the game. So we are going to notice them. Of course, everyone is going to prey on any version of the Astros' downfall. No surprise about that. To your point, I'm sure they will have an incredible run where they like all have a scoreless month and it's like, how does anybody beat them? But for now, it's you got to get them when you can get them.
And I think to your point about Hader and the homers, I think that's something that Astros fans are going to have to get used to, especially in that ballpark now. Yeah. Because Josh Hader, even when electric, he does give up some homers, right? That fastball, it doesn't have as much movement as like a Blake Treinen in his prime, where it's like, I don't know how guys get hits off of him.
How do you elevate it?
Exactly.
Right? That's the thing. It's like either, and there's actually a good number of pitchers like this now where it's like either, I mean, Gerrit Holt, hello, right? Now, he obviously fixed that a little bit last year, but it's like either you can't touch it or you hit it over the fence, which is weird. It's like, it's kind of, you know, counterintuitive that it would be that kind of binary, but like, that's kind of modern baseball because of the swings and because of how hard guys are throwing and because of throwing at the top of the zone where if you're missing, and I know, I think the pitch last night was a hanging slider. But still, like, it is interesting how sometimes pitchers are homer prone, but also strikeout heavy. It is a very interesting mix, but Hader definitely exemplifies that sometimes.
Especially when it's like, all right, how do I get you to 2 strikes? I think a lot of relievers think this way. It's like, oh, if I get you to 2 strikes, it's over, buddy.
It's over.
But
it's
before over. That's where you can get. You better get me before you get to 2 strikes. And so,
that's true.
Yeah, I think to our point, like, I think Josh Hader's going to be fine. I think he's going to be really good. But, hey, get him early in the count.
Hey, let's flip this quickly because you mentioned, okay, especially in that ballpark. Now, let's say, though, this was no Crawford box shot. Right. This was Davis Schneider going 423 to left center, which was no cheapie. Okay, this was an absolute rocket. And now let's flip it to Davis Schneider. Russ, I had this over the winter, okay? Every couple weeks, I would have this just like intrusive thought of like, what if Davis Schneider is for real? What if Davis Schneider, who gave us an 1,000 OPS in 140 plate appearances last year, I don't even care if it's 1,000. What if it's an 850? What if he's just like one of the best lefty mashers in the game? What does that do for this Blue Jays lineup that, again, is so inconsistent despite all the star power? And already, you know, he's given us a couple homers, and including that one, probably, you know, the biggest one of his career so far. It's just like I feel like he did that last year, and we were like, ha, 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 Davis Schneider. All right, that was cute, whatever. And that's fair to some degree. I mean, this guy's done is mash for like 3 years in the minors. Like, I don't know what this is actually going to make become. And I know Blue Jays fans, of course, want to see more of him regularly. But it was to already have those moments early in the season. Was like, okay, David Schneider, guys, let's maybe start taking him sort of seriously.
I think people see the mustache and the goggles and like, there's no way. There's no way.
He's not a big dude either.
He's not like, big at all. Like, he might be like 5'9", 5'10", but that was a big boy shot that he hit. Like, that's in the Jeff Bagwell section of Minute Maid Park. Like, that was no cheapie at all. And maybe in a lineup where we expect that, like the result of balls flying out of the ballpark, maybe it is the Davis Schneider that helps that lineup, right? Like, I think when you, the Blue Jays are such an interesting and fascinating team to me because I think there was an expectation for them as a ball club, especially as an offense, where it's like, your bar is here with Vladdy and Bo, and then you bring in George Springer, and it's like, all right, you guys should be one of the best offenses in baseball and one of the best teams in baseball. And for a while there, they were like the sexy pick of the Blue Jays are going to the World Series. And then they didn't reach their expectations. And then it happened again. And now it's like, well, I don't necessarily expect you guys to do this because when I did, you didn't succeed. And so maybe they fly under the radar a little bit where it's like, all right, now we have to prove to people that we can still be that team that we were expected to be. And I don't like doing the whole, this is the last year or else. But it feels in a division where the Orioles are going to be a thing for a while, you better do it right now because you might not have that many opportunities left.
Right. And again, with Bo and Vlad's future so uncertain again, but that's the thing, right? Is let's grant them that Bo and Vlad get back to all-star, you know, MVP level. You're going to need still more than that. And if Davis Schneider is any semblance of that, if he's a regular offensive contributor with an 820 OPS, that's a big deal. That is a really, really, really big deal. And if he's a cult hero to go along with it, even better.
And I'm going to continue to say this till I'm blue in the face. The Blue Jays don't work. That thing does not work if Vlad isn't special. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Bo Bichette being, and he's been fantastic the last couple of seasons. I don't want to take away from Bo at all. He's one of the best offensive shortstops in the game. He's going to get paid a lot of money, whether it's in Toronto or elsewhere. But for the Blue Jays to be the team that they expect to be and that we have expected them to be, Vlad has to be a special, and I mean 950 plus OPS type of guy. Like in 21, if Shohei doesn't exist, he is the unanimous MVP. Like he had an outstanding season, but that set a bar for him of like, all right, that's what it has to be for you guys to be that team. And if he's just going to be a 830, 860 OPS guy, it doesn't work the same.
Yeah, no, I'm with you, and I think it's absolutely still in there, and I don't know. The Blue Jays are. It was just such a sour ending to last year.
Yeah.
That they, let alone a very, I would say, in terms of like fan satisfaction, probably a bottom five offseason. And so, in that sense, I think it was hard to get excited about them. But I still looked at the roster. I was like, man, like. I don't know. They still got a lot of good players, talent. So I know it's not going to be easy in that division, but we'd be picking them to win the Central. in that sense, we should not totally overlook them. All right, Russ, before we get to a break, let's just hit a couple other moments, just some home runs that really, really struck us over the last couple of days. Let's just do this quickly. Mike Trout. Oh, my God.
Stop now, throwing balls at the bottom of the zone to Mike Trout. And we've been saying
please keep doing it. No, I disagree. I disagree. I would like you, it's the opposite of Mookie. Not that I don't enjoy Mookie home runs. We're seeing plenty of them. Please keep throwing it down there. Keep thinking, Mike Trout, he can't hit this anymore. Oh, really? Oh, are you sure about that?
This isn't some kid that we don't have a scouting report on. This is the guy that's been the best player in baseball for a decade, going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. We put him in the conversation with guys like Willie Mays and Hank Aaron for being like the best player we've ever seen. He's modern day Mickey Mantle. Why are in his, like, when you look at the heat map
the heat map, you see a guy's zone.
Anything like in the knees to thigh area, that's Mike Trout's hot zone. And in year, I think it's like 11 or 12 for Mike Trout, people are still going down. You know what? Maybe this is the time we can get it past them. Nope. 473.
poor George Soriano. Listen, man, I know you haven't been in the big leagues for very long. I know maybe you weren't locked in when Trout was at his best. That's not the pitch to throw. However, glad he did. Because that was not a part of Lone Depot that we have seen visited very often. I tweeted about it. And really, again, Giancarlo hit a couple up there, but really it was reminiscent. And again, obviously with the home run sculpture leaving it, lots changed about that ballpark. But I mean, it really took me back to the 2017 Home Run Derby. Like, that is really the only time you were seeing baseballs hit up in that general region. So Mike Trout, you are amazing. Good for the Angels, kind of getting right. The Marlins, oh, it's six. Oh, no. Okay, I don't want to. It's not great. Not great. Anyway, from Mike Trout to Bryce Harper. Bryce Harper hits three home runs last night, including a grand slam. He was 0 for 12 or whatever coming into the game. Of course he was going to do this. I do think that Bryce Harper's power output this year, now that he is at full strength, is going to be really interesting. I think Bryce Harper, the first baseman, which he is now, it's now all the more important, right? Like, yeah, dude, you gotta be slugging if you're going to be an everyday first baseman. And I think he will absolutely be doing that. So it was nice to see. It was nice to just see kind of those familiar swings from Bryce in a very real way, and not at all surprising. I know the Phillies had sort of a disappointing first couple games, but that was a nice way to be like, okay, everything's going to be all right.
Yeah, good Bryce is great for the game. And you talk about the power output. He's always been the guy, when healthy, 35 to 40 homers. And now, not having to have the stress of playing right field, and you can play first base, where he's actually been pretty solid defensively. You know, he was last year. He's only going to get better. He's super athletic, so that helps. You would have to imagine like a 5% uptick in his offensive production. Maybe if it's really good, a 10% increase. And now you're talking about a guy that even in his MVP seasons, I think one year he hit, you know, 35 or 36 home runs. The other he hit 40. I think that can be a reasonable expectation where, all right, Bryce could hit 40 home runs consistently healthy at first base.
Yeah, because again, his power just wasn't there until the final 2 months last year. But yeah, career high is 42 in 2015. Yeah, I'll say it right now. I think he's going to hit more than that. Let's go. Is he going to hit three homers every night? Of course not. But I think a full healthy season, only played 126 games last year, right? Like, I think especially in that ballpark, we've only seen him play a full season in that ballpark in his first year in Philly in 2019. So I like his chances to go over 40 this year. So that was very cool. The other thing, and last moment here before we take a break, is Ricardo Pinto. Listen, I know it's like, who's Ricardo Pinto? We're talking about Renel Blanco. This guy who last pitched for the Phillies in 2017 and since then was on the Rays for a hot second. He made 30 starts in Korea in 2020. He was in Taiwan. He was in Mexico. And now here he is showing up in the middle of the game, called up in AAA from AAA that earlier that day. He shows up in the middle of the game, throws four innings in a blowout, gets the four inning save. Ricardo Pinto, I'm sure, again, like, this is just a great baseball thing that is just so delightful. And now Ricardo Pinto currently rocking one of my favorite baseball reference pages in the league as someone with, you know, 7 years or 6 years between appearances.
The guy loves baseball, right? Like, you just said hella stops between the last time he pitched in Philly to now. And they said that the car came to pick him up. He got caught in traffic, didn't make it to the ballpark until like the fourth inning. And you know, he said what's up to his manager, ran out to the bullpen, and then he's pitching the same game.
Let's just give you a sense for how long this has been. The last game that Ricardo Pinto pitched for the Phillies, which was September 21st, 2017, he allowed a home run to Andre Ethier. Okay. Wow. Here's the Phillies lineup last time Ricardo Pinto pitched for the Phillies. Cesar Hernandez, Freddie Galvis, Nick Williams, Rhys Hoskins, Aaron Altair, Odubel Herrera, Jorge Alfaro, J.P. Crawford playing third base. That's hilarious. Mark Leiter Jr. starting. Tommy Joseph pinch hit. It has been a minute. Ricardo Pinto, we salute you. All right, Russell, let's take a quick break. And we return. We will hit a couple other news and notes from around the league. We'll be right back on Baseball Podcast.
We'll be right back.
back to Baseball Barbercast. I'm Jordan Schusterman, joined by Russ Dorsey. And Russ, I know we just hit a bunch of game action. Before we get to a couple of news and notes, let's just acknowledge quickly. Garrett Crochet. Oh my gosh. He just delivered an absolute gem against the Braves last night. And I said it when we were going into opening day. I was like, hold on a second. Listen, the White Sox are going to be terrible. But this could be something that White Sox fans can look forward to every fifth day. And for that, I am so happy for them, because there's not going to be a lot of that this year on the South Side.
No, it was nasty. Nasty performance, and nasty in a good way for Garrett Crochet. And you look at the type of pitcher he is. You look at the road that he took from Tennessee, expedited to the big leagues, and your mind automatically goes to, oh, Chris Sale, which is unfair to both Sale, because he was amazing in his run with the White Sox.
Disrespectful.
And then Crochet, because yeah. It's like, don't compare me. Let me make my own path. But he was nasty. And like coming back off of Tommy John surgery, the fact that they said, all right, you're going to be a starter full time now, like they did with Sale. I know it's unfair for both, but the paths are eerily similar. And he didn't do that against the Oakland A's or the Colorado Rockies. He did that against the Atlanta Braves, and a Braves team that had their full lineup there in Chicago at Guaranteed Rate Field. A fantastic performance. And for White Sox fans, I know they have been looking for any reason to be excited about an otherwise terrible roster. And my dad is a lifelong Chicago White Sox fan. And I see him all the time. And you know how hard it is, Jordan Schusterman, to look your father in the eye knowing that his team is not good? It's very hard, especially when his son is now national baseball writer guy and has to tell him, Dad, your team's not good, man. Gotta but I won't do straight. That because I love him. Yeah. And now my dad has something to like look forward to every fifth day.
Every fifth day.
Every fifth day. Yeah, not every day. Because baseball is every day. But I only want him to watch the White Sox like in games that Crochet pitches.
Exactly. I was going to say, you spare him the other ones. And by the way, I mean, it almost, Michael Kopech made it interesting last night. I know he's transitioning to his closer role. That's something we got to talk about at some point
because, yeah, I don't know if that has gone the way the White Sox have wanted to go.
Listen, the White Sox are going to be very bad. The Rockies, we could do a whole podcast on the Christopher Morel Little League home run. They're going to be very bad. Shota Imanaga, by the way, he looked great. There are some bad teams. I've said it last first episodes of the season. Our quartet of poop right now at the bottom, Russ. Okay, of Oakland, Chicago, Colorado, and Washington. I consider Washington at the top of that group with the possibility to work their way to that next tier of bad baseball team. But those three, at least, I mean, it's going to be a long season. It's going to be a long season, Russ.
Yeah, like Shota Imanaga was very good in his first start for the Cubs in electric type of stuff. But as opposed to Crochet, who did against the Braves, he did do it against the Rockies. And I don't mean to say that in a disparaging way about the Rockies. If anybody on that roster or in that organization is listening, it's just in comparison to some of other rosters around the game, it's just not the same. The Oakland A's, we've talked ad nauseum about their situation over the last year. Where will they play? Are they going to have to find like a park somewhere to play baseball until they get a new stadium? Maybe. Not a lot of good baseball around the game from those teams. And I don't know who loses the most games of those three.
So I think I actually wouldn't pick the White Sox because of the division. I think, and I know you're playing fewer division games, but the White Sox are the team that is essentially most committed. I guess Oakland is committed to being bad. I don't know, man. Probably Colorado, but I'm not sure. It's gonna be close. Quickly on Imanaga though, I don't know if they've announced when he's starting again. Dodgers come to Wrigley this weekend. I don't know if he's gonna get that Sunday start, But even if not, series after that is Padres, right? So he's going to, we'll see it quickly here against a much better offense. I'm optimistic about Imanaga this season. That will be a very different challenge, I would say. So I think that is very important. You mentioned quickly just about Oakland. We'll use this as a transition to a couple of other news and notes before we get out of here. Of course, as you mentioned, like where are the A's going to play? It seems like because the lease in the Coliseum is up after the season, they're trying to figure out, can we continue to play in Oakland? Are we going to play somewhere in Sacramento? It seems like that those negotiations will continue. Again, it's really, really tough to watch because last year felt like the end. You know, the way that it was treated, it felt like the end. And now maybe it is just for the season, but it's just so hard to watch. And it's so unfortunate for the players who, of course, have nothing to do with this. And whatever you think, listen, are the A's making some weird decisions in terms of their roster right now? Yes. Do I think that has really anything to do with ownership? No. I don't think John Fisher cares at all about what is happening to the team, other than the fact, as long as it has the lowest payroll in baseball, I don't think he cares whatsoever what roster decisions are being made. And so I just want to move that to the side. But the point is like, it's just a really, really tough situation. And I don't know how this is going to get resolved, but it is such a stain on baseball that this is how this franchise is being treated. And with no resolution in sight, it is frankly embarrassing and entirely unfortunate for so many reasons. And it just makes me sad.
1,000%. Yeah, it's a fan base that deserves so much better than they're getting right now. And the idea that it all resolves if and when they move to Las Vegas is ridiculous because you still have the same ownership group. And you think somebody who's been playing the lowest payroll in all of Major League Baseball is all of a sudden going, ooh, let's just spin big now. Absolutely not.
Yeah, yeah. So again, Oakland, again, as we get more substantial updates, we will address them accordingly. However, on the topic of stadiums and new stadiums, one bit of news we did want to address, and I'll admit I have not been following this story as closely until the last couple of days, but essentially, as you may be familiar if you're not in the following the Kansas City situation, but basically the Royals, along with the Chiefs, but the Royals have been trying to get a new downtown ballpark in Kansas City. Of course, if you've been to Kauffman Stadium, which I'll admit I haven't, but you just look at it on Google Maps, where's Kauffman Stadium? It's out in the middle of a parking lot, very far away from downtown. Now, there's some great things about that, of course. Yeah. It's way at not anywhere downtown. Now, as we've seen in many cases, in many other we want to build a new stadium. How are we going to get it? We're going to ask for as much public funding as possible. We're going to put it to a vote and we're going to see if we can get it. We have seen successful versions of that where votes kind of get rammed through and the public is not necessarily informed on it. And they say, yeah, sure, we vote for it. And then the taxpayers pay for the whole stadium. It appears that that is not what has happened in Kansas City, as they have voted against the proposed bill to pay for, you know, a certainly large percentage of the new stadium and renovating the Chiefs Stadium and whatnot. And it is a good reminder of, even if, obviously Kansas City cares about the Royals and cares about the Chiefs, it is not that simple. And I think that from what I've seen, and I would love to get someone from Kansas City to kind of come on and talk about this more thoroughly, but it is just a reminder that these issues are not as simple and as just like, oh, of course, the fans will pay for it or whatever. I think that the people in these communities in these different counties that are able to have their voice be heard, I think it's important. And I think it's not, of course, they're gonna threaten and say, we're going to take the Royals out of Kansas City. Like, listen, the people called their bluff, and now hopefully there can be more productive conversations about either a new stadium, whether it's downtown or not. So again, I am not going to pretend like I'm an expert on this matter, but I know you saw this as well and wanted to give a few thoughts on this, but it is a very important issue. And I hope that it gets resolved in a productive way and doesn't get as ugly as the situation is, of course, the worst case scenario that we see in Oakland.
I'm not the brightest person when it comes to cities and ordinances and, you know, you got things going to council people, et cetera. But I think one thing that the Royals have over the Marlins, the Rays, the White Sox, who got a proposed stadium that will never happen, is that, one, you have a city where winning has been happening. And believe it or not, that matters, right? What are we mentioning with the Marlins and the White Sox and the A's? Teams that have not been able to win. So you want to build a stadium for bad baseball teams. Seems pretty hard. If I'm a taxpayer, I don't want to pay for any billionaire's new stadium, but especially a stadium where losing is going to happen, right? If you're the Royals, John Sherman, who became the owner of the Royals, the majority owner in 2019. So you got new money coming in. And he, as he's shown this offseason, he wants to invest in the Royals.
Great.
The other thing, they have a superstar on their roster in Bobby Witt Jr. That is getting better, that they got to commit to Kansas City for a minimum of 7 years. I think that helps a great deal. And also being able to kind of work with the Chiefs a little bit of like, all right, how we both help each other out here so we both get what we want. I think all that matters. I actually think, and I don't have any inside knowledge, but just of all those things, I think they have a good opportunity to end up getting that downtown stadium that they want. But I imagine that Bobby Witt Jr. is extremely important to their efforts to be like, look, a guy we drafted, developed, and has committed to Kansas City for the next 7 years, and we want to keep him here.
You know, I to that sense, like, in a lot of ways, the Royals have taken the right steps, right, to show the commitment to investing in the team, in the actual baseball team, a team that admittedly has been terrible recently, but of course is trying to build towards something that is not that and has succeeded in the not so distant past, of course, in a real way. But of course, the Chiefs will be part of that. Again, I'm sure there's details to this that are, I would love to, I'm still kind of getting my arms around the story. But so if you're in Kansas City, if you voted on this, if you have thoughts on this, let us know. BaseballBarbercast@gmail.com. I would love to hear from people. And I'm sure we'll get a special guest on at some point soon to kind of talk about this, because this is a situation that feels a little bit more nuanced and is interesting in a way that, of course, the Oakland one, not that it isn't, but it's gotten so ugly and is so far gone that it's a little bit harder to talk about, you know, kind of the interesting nuts and bolts of the proposal and what it kind of represents. So anyway, we'll keep an eye on that story. That is certainly very important. A couple other pieces of news that we just wanted to address. Very unfortunate injury. Of course, we had all kinds of injuries in spring training, but, you know, we're bound to get one of these every once in a while. And that is a hit by pitch that is, you know, a broken hand, broken wrist. And that is Josh Jung of the Texas Rangers, who breaks his wrist on a hit by pitch against the Rays. This just sucks for a guy who's already been dealing with a bunch of weird injuries over the last few years as his career has kind of started to get going. Now, it says a lot about the Rangers where I'm like, it'll be fine. You know, they get to call up Justin Foscue, who's been raking in the upper minors the last few years. You know, I don't think he's going to be anywhere as good as Josh Jung, but that's a plug and play guy that not a lot of organizations have. So in that sense, they'll probably be fine. It's just really unfortunate because Jung's someone that could have established himself as one of the best third basemen in baseball this year. And instead, you know, he will have that kind of a delayed start, which is unfortunate.
That guy can absolutely swing it. And it sucks not. And you talk about this has kind of happened to him now to start his career each season. And it's very similar to Royce Lewis, right? Yeah. Where it's like this dude is an absolute stud and his body isn't letting him be a stud. And it sucks. And it sucks for those teams. Like Royce Lewis is going to be out for a month and Josh Jung is going to have surgery on that wrist. They're going to put pins and a plate in, and he's going to be out for 6 weeks before he can get to baseball activity again. So, yeah, it's hard when you get these young players who you know are going to be guys, right? You know Josh Jung, because when he was already starting in that game, he had already homered and had been swinging back so well coming out of the gate. And the fact that now that hurts his development and like what type of player will be back? Will that power be sapped because of that broken wrist? Like that's what you are concerned about, especially for a power guy. So it sucks. It's unfortunate. And you hope this, because it is kind of a freak accident with him where you're swinging at something, ball hits you. You don't expect that to happen and that he can be okay after this.
Yeah, and again, like, right, the Lewis combo, I totally understand that just because it's just like the stop and start of a young career. most of the young stuff have been fluky. Lewis, like, I mean, God bless him. I love that guy more than most players. But yeah. At some point, I think you can be considered injury prone, and that's fine. It's nothing personal. It's not a coincidence. You know, sometimes injury does portend future injury. In Young's case, it's just bad luck. So hopefully he'll be back. But this Rangers lineup is going to be just fine. On the injury front, Walker Buehler made a rehab start recently. And I, again, like with so much Dodger stuff going on, it's kind of hard to keep track of some of the injuries and when we're expecting guys back, because it's like, who cares? Like, look at this team. Well, how badly do they need him? Especially with how Glasnow has looked and how Bobby Miller has looked and how Yamamoto looked in his second start. I know you, I think, talked to Buehler before he went to his rehab start. But yeah, I mean, this seems like a guy that we could see in the relatively near future. And that's not that they desperately need him, but that's a pretty big deal if he's anywhere close to what he was before he had TJ.
Yeah, he looked good. He said he felt good. He's been throwing hard, which, you know, coming off of a second Tommy John surgery, you never know how guys are going to respond. Like, I think the biggest example we've seen is Nate Eovaldi, right? Coming off of two Tommy John surgery and still being able to be that guy that can pound the strike zone with velocity. Like he's been able to do the last couple of years. And, you know, just Walker physically, if you look at him when he got his start with the Dodgers and you look at him now, it's a guy that has added weight. And I know he said that that's something that he focused on in this second, going into the second Tommy John surgery. And we'll see if that helps him. But, you know, he, in his start, got the first seven, retired the first seven hitters he faced, then ran into a little bit of trouble after that before his outing ended. But I think to your point, with Bobby Miller looking super nasty Friday against the Cardinals, with Yamamoto looking better in his second start than he did in that first start in Korea, which is probably a lot for him. Like, first start, you want to impress and show out. Even if you don't expect Walker Buehler to make 20 starts for the Dodgers, you look at that June-July rotation in LA, it could be pretty nasty, right? And obviously they're going to, you know, allow some of those guys to work back into game shape. But Kershaw, we don't know what's going to happen with Clayton Kershaw, but that could be a guy that is making starts for the Dodgers in August and September. Walker Buehler, who knows if, you know, Dustin May comes back and pitches for them in some capacity August or September. Like, the future Dodgers could be better than the present Dodgers, and it's not unreasonable to think how good they could be.
And to me, it's not even, I mean, that's what you said is totally true, but I'm just fascinated. It's not just like, oh, how good could it be if they're all back and they're all pitching so well? Because of the contract status and because of the injury timelines of all of these guys, including Ohtani, you know, who is in that rotation in 2025? Is Buehler still there? You know, is Gonsolin? I mean, Gonsolin's is completely, he's way off the radar at this point. Like, there's, not to mention, you know, that next wave of guys like Gavin Stone that we're still kind of seeing where they fit in. But, I mean, listen, we're 3 years removed from it, but Walker Buehler 2021 was, you know, fourth in the Cy Young, was worth seven Baseball Reference WAR. Like, he was tremendous. So, if he can be anything close to that, wow. One final transaction we wanted to acknowledge, Joey Bart. What a weird note to end this podcast on, but Joey Bart has been traded to the Pittsburgh Pirates. If you listened to our episode over the winter, when we were doing Prospect Barbacast with Mike Farron, I encourage people to go back and listen to that, because we talked about Joey Bart for a long time, and that whole conversation basically holds up how he was developed in a very fascinating way with the Giants. Some could argue he kind of got screwed. Some could argue, listen, he had his chances and he didn't prove it. Now with Patrick Bailey, the guy they drafted right after drafting him, and has clearly, you know, kind of asserted himself as the franchise catcher. We knew his, and after they signed Tom Murphy, we knew his time in San Francisco was limited. And it was only a matter of time that they were able to even get anything for him, by the way, I think is a credit to their patience in the way that they handled it. Because the pitcher that they got, Austin Strickland, I actually like, and I think fits the Giants' mold of like a sinker baller type that could develop into something. But Joey Bart, what happens next with him? Going to the Pirates, obviously they want to invest heavily in Henry Davis being their franchise catcher. But if he can salvage himself as an offensive, you know, forward backup, like that's still useful. And maybe it is more than that, but how much playing time he gets behind the plate with Henry Davis is going to be a really, really interesting mix.
Yeah. And maybe it's an opportunity for Joey Bart, who is actually pretty sound defensively. I know he got his bones as being this slugging Mike Zunino type of offensive prospect as a catcher, right? Friend of the podcast, Mike Zunino.
Yeah, absolutely.
What if, because Joey Bart actually hit really well in spring training this year, he gets more time at first base, and that allows him to get at bats and get in the lineup more. Maybe that's where we see the Joey Bart breakout. Like, because Henry Davis is there and that's the Pirates catcher of the future, maybe Joey Bart has more of an opportunity to get in the lineup every day as a first baseman. And maybe that allows him to tap into that offensive potential.
Yeah. And I think what we're going to learn pretty quickly is, are the Pirates viewing this as worthwhile catching depth, right? Of course, Grandal's been hurt, Jason DeLay, their other backup, I think, injured. Or is it like a buy low? Or is it somewhere in between?
Yeah.
We're going to find out pretty quickly based on how many plate appearances he's getting. I don't see, because I think to your point, like if they do believe in him as a hitter, then I think they're going to try to work him in at first base. You know, right now they've got the rowdy Connor Joe platoon. Obviously they have Kutch at DH. But either way, it's nice to see that he will not just rot in AAA. Like he is going to hopefully get a chance to establish himself as a big league catcher in some form. And that's good. That's, I think, a good thing that he was able to do that. It's unfortunate that kind of how it went in San Francisco. Let's not beat it. Like, they picked him second, and this is how it's great. Like, that's not a success, you know? That is a failure on the player's part. It's a failure on the organization's part. There's no way around that. But there's obviously still, you know, potential road ahead of him to be a big leaguer, which is good. All right, Russ, I've taken up enough of your time. You have been a wonderful co-host. I will say there was a lot we didn't get to. Jake will hopefully be back later this week. So I did save some other goofy stuff that I want to make sure I get to with Jake later. But Russ, this was an absolute delight. I would say plug your work, but this is we're teammates. It's the Autumn Sports. Check it out. You can read Russ. You got some good videos coming out all the time on social and of course on yahoosports.com. So make sure you read Russ. Make sure you follow Russ. We really appreciate everything that you're about, and I'm sure you'll be back on this podcast at some point. So thank you, sir, for joining me. I hope you had an okay time.
I had a fantastic time with you, Jordan Schusterman. Anytime you need me, as always, I will be here.
Wonderful. Thank you, Russ. Thank you, producer Andrew Hartz, for making this episode possible. You can email us at baseballbarbercast@gmail.com, and we will talk to you again on Friday.
One, two, three, four. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.